from the lakefront to the riverfront. This is where Wisconsin fans come to talk.
From the lakefront to the riverfront, this is where Wisconsin sports fans come to talk. The Bill Michaels Show, named Best Radio Show in the Wisconsin Broadcasters Awards for Excellence. Now, here's your host, Bill Michaels.
And after that little musical interlude, welcome back to the Bill Michaels Show, a Wednesday edition. Tim Allen in for Bill today. Radio Joe is here. Yeah, sneaky recording devices, recording me and my guitar there, doing the Bill Michaels open. Thank you, Joe.
You're welcome.
Always trying to make people look bad.
I call it entertainment.
Okay, very good. Yeah, you're getting there. Good job.
Because after all, everyone rips on me. So
it's just entertainment.
Yeah, just entertainment.
That's right.
Right.
Real quick, we're going to get to Paul Imig. I would say that, you know, people have been asking me, well, how did the Packers pull the upset in Chicago? The defense is the key, not the Bears' defense. If I'm the Packers and their defensive strategy is to go in there and just play, well, just do your job and do your role, I think you're making a mistake. You know what I would do? I would say a jailbreak blitz almost every play against that Chicago Bears offense. They'll flop that football all over the carpet. They will.
We have seen versions of that in the past from Patton, where he puts like seven guys on the line of scrimmage and just sends all of them.
Change the narrative of that football game on Sunday. Make it about the Packers' defense and go from there. Let's see what Paul has to say about that.
Need the latest news and analysis on your green and gold? Well, we better call Paul.
Green and gold analyst Paul Imig is brought to you by Sprinkler Fitters Local 183, protecting life and property in Wisconsin since 1906. For career opportunities, go to sprinklerfitters183.org.
Schneider Orange Hotline is where we're going to find Paul Imig, green and gold analyst, here on the Bill Michaels Show. Paul, what do you think of that? If the Packers try and change things around a little bit and just absolutely beast up defensively against what I think is a suspect Bears offense.
Well, I'm trying to think football right now, but all I can actually think is 8-5-5, 8-5-5.
Yeah, blame Joe on that.
8-5-5, 8-5-5, 8-5-5, 8-3-0-8-6-4-8.
Those are the real words to that song, too, or numbers, as it were.
I agree with Joe. That's awesome entertainment. So, Joe, keep recording him when he's not aware of it. Okay, to football. Tim, I think what the Rams probably thought going into this past weekend was certainly not that they were going to put up single-digit points against the Bears. And I think they probably said, hey, if we can hold Chicago to 15, isn't that what the Bears finished with against the Rams, 15?
Yep.
They probably figured, geez, I mean, we only allow 15 points. We're going to win by 10 minimum. And it was a much different story. And I think if the Packers are good, I mean, I think I would disagree with what your take was on that, only in the sense that I think what Chicago has clearly molded its identity to be, and not like, you know, a mid-tier NFL team identity, but like, are we seriously talking about them as an NFC contender type of identity?
Right.
As being a defensive juggernaut. I mean, Akeem Hicks is as good of a defensive lineman as you're going to find outside of Aaron Donald in the league. Khalil Mack has obviously made a huge difference. They're having a great year out of Kyle Fuller, who was darn near a Packer, if not for the offer being matched by the Packers. They are a beast of a defensive team, and to go into Chicago and even put up 10 points, 10, is apparently easier said than done right now.
No. I understand that, but yeah. wouldn't forcing the Bears to turn the ball over, let's just say for the sake of the argument, that they have, you know, two or three big third down stops on a sack and maybe two or three turnovers. I'm talking about the Packers defensively. Yeah. Wouldn't that give you then more opportunities? Because the more opportunities you get, even against a good to great defense, it still is going to mean, you know, that 14 to 17 point range. Just give the Packers offense more opportunities and more possessions with the football.
Yeah, it for sure would. I think the only problem with that is, and I don't have the numbers right in front of me, so give or take one on this stat, but the Bears have 34 takeaways this year.
Yep.
The Packers have 14.
You got to force more.
But and that's just not who I don't think this Packers team is right now. We saw a great play from Bashaud Breeland this past Sunday that wasn't just a takeaway, but a pick six. To reinvent maybe your own, and now speaking about Green Bay's identity on the fly and trying to say, like, hey, if only we could create three turnovers, they're not even averaging more than one turnover, not even 1.1. Like, they're a one turnover per game if they're lucky.
I get it. Desperate times, desperate measures, man. I think though, if you try defensively, the scheme for the Packers,
yeah.
If you just try to play it man up and do your job sort of football, I don't think that's going to be good enough against, again, I do have some issues with the Bears offense. I just don't think with the points that may be limited for the Packers offense, I don't think it's going to be good enough.
Yeah. And I think what you're saying, if I was to, try to interpret more of it, is that because the Bears are, you're basically treating the Bears then like such a significantly superior team that you, the Packers, especially defensively and Mike Pettine, should rewrite their own strategy and playbook because, hey, if you're going to beat the better team, if you're going to play the underdog card, you have to almost change everything you do.
Not everything, but just have some things shake out a little bit different.
Yeah, and probably the only way to do that, though, to your original statement was, you know, hey, every play is a six-man rush. And if it works, great. And if it turns out into 50-yard plays, then that's the counter to that. And I, you know what, Tim, you know, as we talk about, I mean, I don't think it's what they're going to do, but, I just wonder if, again, this is not a Chicago offense that's the part that's going to carry them however far they go in the playoffs. It's going to be their defense. And so I just wonder if you let Trubisky try to beat you, and you basically dare him to throw the balls that he might throw, whether it's a three-man rush or a six-man rush. It kind of reminds me like almost of week one in the Bears game. And to be honest, most NFL games, what the Packers do in the first half, defensively, offensively, you name it, isn't necessarily what's going to happen in the second half. You couldn't have had a more decisive first half than you did in week one, Green Bay, Chicago up at Lambeau Field. And when the two teams come out, Rodgers hobbles his way out, does a two-step drop game, and the whole thing looks different. Khalil Mack went from having, three takeaways in the first half alone to being invisible in the second half. So maybe it's something that, I would – it's 10-0 at halftime, and you're Mike Pettine. You say, screw it. Our season's on the line.
Right.
What do we have to lose? Let's go. I would applaud the idea, and I think if I don't know if you institute it from jump, from kickoff, but
right.
If we saw that, Tim, I would be like, Mike Pettine, man, way to go. I mean, I would love it. Just selfishly watching the game, I would be like, hey, man, good for you. Way to throw all your chips in the middle of the table. So. It's a cool thought, and honestly, I wonder if they do get down double digits, 10-13, if it may realize, hey, we needed a defensive score or a main defensive takeaway to turn the tide of this game, then hey, let's go for it. So, yeah, let's see if Pettine gets crazy.
This is a noon kick, right? I mean,
right.
Yeah, and it is really too bad that this isn't a night game, because, and even if it's not, your thought on the mindset of Aaron Rodgers I consider this, although not a night game, I consider this a big stage game, at least in our world,
yes.
Our neck of the woods. I just wonder if how much relishing in the thought that Aaron Rodgers has of this challenge. I almost envision this wry smile out of him, like, yeah, okay, I've had bigger challenges than this. Let's go, baby.
Yeah.
What do you think his thoughts are heading into this game?
Well, a couple things. One, Rodgers doesn't lose at Soldier Field, and I think Aaron, knows that. It's just so rare that he goes in there. I mean, go back to the 2013 Week 17 game when you know, they have the miraculous 50-yard whatever play to Randall Cobb to win and win the division at 8-7-1. It seems no matter how far the chips are stacked against Rodgers and the Packers when they're at when they're in Chicago, they find a way to do it, even dating back to their Super Bowl run in 2010 when they went in Chicago and won in the snow game. So I'm sure that is a quiet confidence that he's going to kind of swagger into with just because, hey, he's done it so many times. I think anything that's happening in the recent days, weeks, months following Mike McCarthy's firing is part of what's going to write Aaron Rodgers' legacy story. You know, his autobiography one day or someone's biography that they write of him one day, it's going to be, you know, the immediate aftermath of the post-Mike McCarthy era. Game one so far in Atlanta, he played well. I don't think he played like, you know, turned his whole season around. He should have thrown two interceptions if the Falcons would just catch passes that go right to them. You know, if those two passes are intercepted, you know, how differently are we reflecting about the way Rodgers played? He still only had 198 passing yards, only still like a 6-point-something, you know, yards per pass attempt. It wasn't like great numbers, but hey, the Packers won. They won decisively. He played well. He had a season high in his rushing yards. And I think now you go into Chicago, keep in mind, too, the Packers can't win, but at least haven't won on the road this year. And that is the last thing that I think that Rodgers ever would want to have on his career resume is an 0-8, let's say he sits out the final game or something if they're out the playoff chase, 0-7, 0-8 type road season. That's just not something that elite quarterbacks have on their resume. So I think there's not just their own personal playoff hopes, but I think those, you know, the mentality of, you know, from Aaron's perspective, I don't lose in Chicago. You know, I just don't do it. And that adding on to that, that every piece of this is part of the legacy, both currently and in the future, of looking back and saying, you know, as soon as Mike McCarthy was gone, Rodgers did this. You know, he followed up game X with game Y. And I think it's hugely important just for, I mean, obviously for their, you know, small chance this year of making the playoffs, but also for where he's going to, you know, maybe how he's going to be remembered and how the difference between with Mike McCarthy and without Mike McCarthy. And this is the early chapters of that second stage.
All right, final thing, Paul Emig, which has the better chance? The rest of the NFC to fall right for the Packers to get into the playoffs or getting this win against the Bears to get in?
I think just the odds would tell you it's a better chance the Packers will win this game than for every other domino to perfectly fall. Do you guys know the spread? I mean, how much are they underdogs?
Six or seven? 6.5?
Six.
That doesn't seem that bad, really. I mean,
it's really not that bad.
No, it's not. I give the Packers a chance in this game, Tim. I watched the Bears play against the Rams, and I said on several occasions watching it, wow. I started to take them. I thought there was an obvious, very clear, it's going to be the Saints or the Rams in the Super Bowl for the NFC. A 98% chance of one of those two teams. And I said, man, I don't think the Rams want to host the Bears in the divisional round or the, you know, even the NFC championship round. I still would probably think the Saints would handle any of these teams in New Orleans in the dome, but I started taking them very seriously. But I mean, having said that, I don't put this game at all in like the Packers. Again, you go back to week one, you don't think that's in the Bears' head. I mean, they're 9-4. They'd be 10-3 if they didn't let a, 20 point, 17 point, whatever it was, halftime deficit and a hobbled Aaron Rodgers come out and beat them and, you know, seemingly at the time reverse the course of their respective seasons. Now, of course, it didn't end up going that way for either team, but you sure thought the way that second half played out, it's the Bears and the Packers. It's the Bears and Rodgers. Here we go again. He's going to dominate them. So for everything else to fall right, Tim, is such a long shot. But
I don't know about that.
You're feeling it. You're feeling lucky.
The Eagles, Redskins, and Panthers, I think that the trump card here is that Minnesota team. That's okay. The one. They're going to have to let him in. But more for another conversation. Paul Emig, Green and Gold analyst. Hey, we appreciate it, and we'll talk soon, all right?
Hey, what's that call-in number again for people?
Jeez. Yeah, no, don't. No. I can just say it to you and not sing it to you. Thank you, Paul.
Okay. All right, Tim.
See you later. He joins us on the Schneider Orange Hotline.
Schneider, hiring drivers right now. They work hard. You work hard. They treat you fair for 80-plus years. They've been getting it done. Here's a phone number for you. Call them, 800-44-PRIDE, or go to schneiderjobs.com.
Milwaukee Bucks, they're going to take on the Pacers tonight. We'll talk some Bucks basketball with Eric Name from The Athletic next here on the Bill Michaels Show.
855-855-8-305-8-308-648-8.
Wisconsin-wide, the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network.
Welcome back, a Wednesday edition of the Bill Michaels Show. Tim in for Bill today. He is back tomorrow and getting over the hump here. Downhill slide toward the weekend. And at the Bucks in action tonight in Indiana. And the Bucks, one of the better teams in the East. And that being said, let's bring in from The Athletic, Eric.
Actually, he just dropped.
Oh, Eric Name of The Athletic.
Stand by.
Okay. Sit tight. We'll join that Schneider Orange hotline in just a second. But admittedly, with what the Brewers did on a run of full additional month, basically, of baseball, and yeah, the Packers season, the NFL season, the Bucks have been flying under the radar to me a little bit, but now starting to gain steam. In the last, I would say, 10 days or so, I had started to pay really close attention. Much like I would with the Brewers or the Packers or whatever. And I tell you, I'm trying to figure out where the pecking order is in the East. As I now look at the landscape, Toronto, 22 wins. Bucks at what, 18? 18 and 8? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You have the Pacers at 17. They were better than I thought. Are they that good?
They were a big surprise last season, and they were a thorn in the Bucks' side for most of it.
Philadelphia is there, although there's some, you know, that's the one team I think that you might want to keep your eyes on also. Once they figure out a little offense, I guess strategy scheme, they may improve as the year goes on, even more so than they are now. What are they at, 18, 19 wins? Somewhere in there.
We're talking Philadelphia?
Yeah.
19.
So there's a team that I think needs to, you know, figure things out a little bit and then go from there. And then there's Boston. I don't even know what Boston's at. 16
yes,
or so?
Yes, 16 and okay. 10, and they've won six straight games.
Yeah.
They got off to a little bit of a bumpy start.
They did. So where in that pecking order are the Milwaukee Bucks here?
Well, let's ask Eric Name.
Let's do it on the Schneider Orange Hotline from The Athletic, Eric Name. Eric, we haven't worked together, but there's always a first, and that is today. What's happening?
Not much. How are you?
More important how you are. And in the landscape of the East, let's start right there. Where do you see these guys? I mean, is it still a work in progress? Because at 18 and 8, it seems like it's a little bit more than that.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you look at this team, it's certainly among the top four. It's in there with the Raptors. They're in there with the Celtics, with the Sixers. And honestly, I think with what we've seen from them early, you know, I might be willing to say that at this point, I think it's looking more like a two-team race with them and the Raptors. The Bucks have dropped a couple of games that they shouldn't have at this point. You know, you remove those, and they're right in that conversation with the Raptors. They've now beat the Raptors twice. You know, I just think with the tough schedule they have at the start of the year and kind of what they've been through thus far, you would think as you kind of get into a new system, you kind of learn new schemes, that there'd be some larger growing pains, and there really hasn't. But that also means some scary things for the rest of the league, that this team's going to continue to get better, and they're already pretty good. So I think when you look at it at the end of the year, they'll be in that top four for sure, and I certainly think they're going to They might be the team in the East that challenges the Raptors for that top spot.
Yeah, a deep run, I think, is fair to expect, right? As I delve into this and do a little reading and studying this morning, a deep run, I think we should expect that, correct?
100%. I think there's no doubt that when you look at this basketball team, that you should expect them to win their first playoff series in 18 seasons. You should expect that. And then when you think about what they can do after that, like I think obviously the Raptors are going to be a tough team to beat. The Celtics are going to be a tough team to beat. The Sixers are going to be a tough team to beat. All three of those teams are going to be what you see in the Eastern Conference semis. And, you know, you'll have to figure out whether or not you can beat one of those teams. But I think they can beat all those teams. I'm not sure they can beat two of those teams to get themselves into the NBA Finals. But, you know, there's no reason to think that this Bucks team can't compete and then also beat all of those other three teams in the East because, well, frankly, they've already done some of that thus far, and they're just so talented and so well coached that everything that kind of made them falter last year in many ways has disappeared when other than seven games. And, you know, I think if they have probably 75% of the league of their coaches coaching instead of Joe Prunty and Jason Kidd stuff, like, I think they probably beat the Celtics, and the Celtics went on a deep run last year. So, yeah, I think expecting a deep run out of this team is totally fair.
And then you have some things that you don't expect that pop up and clear up this Chris Middleton situation. Now, again, I know there was a benching, and then there was a game loss to, I want to say, personal reasons. Yep. Are those two connected?
No, from everything I know, that the benching was definitely about Chris Middleton not playing well, not playing hard enough. Bud has mentioned since, you know, the idea of individual pride, that defensively guys need to have individual pride. And as he said that, in my mind, I thought, well, you can't be talking about anyone other than Chris Middleton. So, of course, I followed up and asked, like, I'm guessing, you know, when you talk about individual pride, you're talking about Chris and kind of what he's done recently. And you look at Chris and how he's reacted since that benching. Obviously, he missed the game on Wednesday. But since then, on Friday night, he went toe-to-toe with Kevin Durant and held Durant to 4 points in the first half, seven turnovers overall on the game. Then on Sunday, he goes into Toronto. He covers Kawhi Leonard for a majority of the game. He gets Kawhi Leonard in the final 5 minutes as well. And you're looking at Chris Middleton going toe-to-toe defensively with two of the 5 to 7 in the league. And when Bud's talking about individual pride, that's what he's talking about. Mm. So I think Middleton has very clearly reacted to what Bud was talking about, why he got benched. So he gets benched for the end of the Knicks game. And since then, his individual effort defensively has improved, and he's been there. And obviously, when you have a game missed for personal reasons at the same time all this is going on, the game after he had been benched, like, obviously people are going to try to put those two things together and kind of conflate some things. But no, that he missed that game for a legitimate personal reason. And, you know, we all have things happen in our lives, and that was one of those moments for Chris. So he had something he had to attend to, so he missed that game. But no, so those two things are not connected. And, you know, for all the people that are trying to connect them, I think you just point to Middleton's defensive effort in the last couple games. And I think you can kind of see that, you know, he's responded in the way that Mike Boonholzer had hoped he would respond when he benched him against the Knicks.
Yeah, and I was hoping the two weren't connected because, I mean, I could see where that would come from, and hopefully it wasn't a rebellious, hey, you bench me, I'm going to bench you guys sort of thing. Do you know, Eric, and I don't want to put you on the spot or anything, but if you do, then fine. Do you know for sure, and you just don't want to say what it was?
It was a personal issue.
Okay, cool.
I'm 100% sure of it.
Okay. All right, cool. Well, that's good news on the Bucks front. Final thing here, Toronto, with those 22 victories, the Bucks, a great job bouncing back after the Warriors. Do they match up well? Because if that's the case, then it might be these two in the Eastern Finals.
That's a really interesting question, because when you look at that Raptors team, you know, I think in the past the Bucks might have struggled with them a little bit, but, you know, with Kawhi Leonard, he's a really strong physical player, super talented, and, you know, I think there's a number of guys that can really make Chris Middleton struggle defensively, typically quicker guys that, you know, are going to be shorter burst movements and, you know, quick crossovers and things like that. And Leonard doesn't do a ton of that. He more or less gets into your body and finds a way to create separation. And Middleton at 6'8 can kind of handle that. So I think they match up pretty well against him. I think Eric Bledsoe matches up relatively well against Kyle Lowry. But I think the question that'll linger over this entire season is, Eric Bledsoe had a great final 2 to 3 months of the season last year, and then he got to the playoffs, and Terry Rozier got in his head, and he just had a terrible playoff series. So Bledsoe hasn't shown anything like that. He hasn't shown really any of the mental lapses that he had last year where he missed defensive assignments and anything like that. Like, he has seemed much more focused, and it seems like that is so far in his past that you couldn't even imagine, even though it was just, 2 or 3 months ago, and as far as NBA play is concerned. So I think that, to me, is the big question lingering over the season. Like, Giannis won't have any problems in the playoffs. He's too good. He's too physical. But, those other guys, like, once you get to the playoffs, can Chris Middleton, do a good job against Kawhi Leonard? Can he handle his business there? And then can Eric Bledsoe handle it against Kyle Lowry? Or if you're talking about the Celtics, can he do it against Kyrie Irving? Like, can he hold his own? If those two can hold their own, this team can really make a deep run and match up pretty well against these teams.
Yeah, you've got a good basketball team, expectations of a deep run, possible MVP in Giannis in a brand new arena, Eric Name of The Athletic. You got a fun job. You're lucky, dude.
Yeah, I'm very lucky. I have no doubts about that.
All right, take it easy. Thanks for the time.
Thank you.
All right, there he is, Eric Name from The Athletic, covering Bucks basketball, with us on the Schneider Orange Hotline.
Schneider hiring drivers right now. They work hard, you work hard, they treat you fair for 80-plus years. They've been getting it done. Call them at 844-PRIDE or go to schneiderjobs.com.
Story time. That's next here on The Bill Michaels Show.
You're listening to The Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network.
The holiday gift that everybody loves, it's compact, tasty, and one size fits all. It's a Cousin Subs gift card, so you can make your life a little easier. Give your friends, your family members a better gift this holiday season. Purchase a $25 gift card today at your favorite Cousin Subs store, and you get a gift certificate for a free 7.5-inch sub. Now, that's the gift that keeps on giving. Cousin Subs, where they believe in better, the official sub sandwich of the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network.
Welcome back. A Wednesday edition of the Bill Michaels Show. Tim in for Bill today, and covered a lot today. It's been fun. Bill is back tomorrow. Little story time. We don't have a tremendous amount of time on this, but I wanted to get to the money aspect of the world of sports and how the really, for all intents and purposes, the innocence is gone. As Don Henley would say, it's the end of the innocence. As a kid, I can throw it back to when I was a kid, the most simplistic, normal, red-blooded American boy that grew up in the state of Wisconsin. And collecting baseball cards, and I was a little bit of a loner. I know, shocking. A little bit of a loner because I grew up with four sisters and a brother, and the brother was sort of a burnout and wasn't that into sports. But I would take whatever paper route money I had on a summer's day and get on my bicycle and go down and ride across town to a little shop. I would buy my sports cards, my baseball cards, and grab two or three packs. They were, 10 cents a pack at the time. And then I have a little money left over. I'd go over to this bakery. This bakery was right down the street, and I'd buy a little thing, a carton of milk, and I would buy this little, fruit pie that I would get. And sit down on a curb, lay my bike down, ball glove hanging out, and then I would go through my packs of cards and have a snack or whatever. And then it got to the point where I was about 12, 13 years old. That's, right in that range, 12, 13 years old, where the Brewers signed what, in for all intents and purposes, was their first free agent signing, and that was Larry Heisel. And you look at it, and I could not believe that he signed a contract that was $3 million. Now, you got to remember, this is late 70s, mid to late 70s. $3 million contract. I was like, whoa, we got a guy that's good. And he did turn out to be good. I think injuries hampered his stay in Milwaukee as a Brewer, but and one of the best guys you'll ever meet. And I've met him several times and had many, many conversations with him. And I thought $3 million, wow, that is just amazing. So everything being relative, now we fast forward decades later. And we have a situation here where the innocence is gone because red-blooded American people are saying no to ungodly amounts of money. Now, the reports were, we'll go to the top of the totem pole here. The reports were that Bryce Harper turned down a $300 million contract. And let that settle in to $3 million back as a kid, snot-nosed kid. And being blown away by that. Now, okay, fine. It's relative to the times and to the, you know, the sports market, if you will. $300 million in baseball. That's guaranteed. Sign your name, get your money. $300 million. Le'Veon Bell, what did he pass up, Joe? By sitting out because he was a little offended?
Somewhere in the neighborhood of $14
million. $14 million. I don't understand how we got to this part. Well, I guess I do. I guess it's greed, in a way. Now, I don't misunderstand. I don't blame the players at all, necessarily, in taking the money that's forked over to you. But $300 million, really? We're going to split hairs at that level? I think it's changed how we view sports now. I really do. We're too busy, you know, maybe looking at it as, why did you do this? When instead, I think if we break it down to, and just to say how I combat this myself, is I become selfish then. If you're selfish, then I'll become selfish. What do I get out of my money? I don't care where it goes because we all know where it's going. You go down to Miller Park, you go to Lambeau Field, you know where it's going. It's going to those guys. Okay, fine. Does it upset you? Yes. Does it? Are they greedy and passing up 300? We could talk all day long about that. I think the way I combat that, and when money comes up, yeah, the way I look at it is, what do I get out of the money I spend on sports? So when I go to a Bucks game or whatever, what do I get? I get a nice night out. I get to see a basketball game. And I refrain from thinking about where the money goes. How did we lose all the innocence of that? I'm a big believer in this, and I've said it before. If you went to the big three, the NBA, the NFL, and Major League Baseball, and you told every single player, from this point forward, you're getting 27% less money across the board. Don't care. You want to walk? There you go. See ya. What percentage of those players would come back and say, okay, I don't like it, but okay. I think the majority of them would. And teachers, and police officers, first responders, those, you guys down in the trenches, I know it's tough to handle and I needed to get this off my chest here today. But to pass up $300 million, to pass up $14 million, to hold out when you already signed your name into a contract, and then on top of that, you held out? Ay, ay, ay. Money, money, money. That's what this is all about. Just a couple of minutes if you want to chime in on this. I don't know where we lost the innocence, but it is now gone. Greed. We'll be back on the Bill Michaels Show.
Border to border, the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network. Now a green and gold update. Here's Mike Clemens.
It's the Packers and the Bears this Sunday at noon in Chicago. The Bears coming off a 15-6 win over the LA Rams on Sunday Night Football. The Bears defense dominated the game, intercepting Rams quarterback Jared Goff four times and nailing him in the end zone for a safety. Chicago's Khalil Mack says the Bears' key word on defense, dominate.
That's the thing I love about this defense, man. No fault to the offense. Just another opportunity for us to go out and show our domination, and that's the mindset from everybody.
The Bears fans are becoming a factor at Soldier Field. They really got loud during the game. Chicago's head coach, Matt Nagy.
We gave the game ball to the city and to the fans, and that's what it's all about. This is all about us and doing this thing together. Our players appreciate it. It was absolutely electrifying from the start to the finish. I mean, it was just powerful.
Packers interim head coach Joe Philbin, after watching the tape of the Bears defense, led by coordinator Vic Fangio.
They're really good at taking the ball away. That really helps the overall big picture of winning and losing football games. They're very well coached, you know, both the front seven, the back end, well coordinated in that regard. And they're talented, you know. I mean, they've got good players at every level of the defense.
And now former linebackers coach Winston Moss, fired last week after 13 seasons in Green Bay, was asked, did he see any rift between Mike McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers?
I don't know the dynamic in the relationship with Mike and A-Rod. Come on, I got to deal with Clay Matthews.
That's Winston Moss in Green Bay. I'm Mike Clemens on the Bill Michaels Show.
This portion of the program brought to you by our good friends at Quick Trip, giving away $15,000 in prizes. Now, you can win an Apple Watch, a Yeti cooler, a PS4 bundle, a KitchenAid mixer, so much more. All you got to do is visit the store, Quick Trip. Through December 25th, you're automatically entered if you're using your Quick Rewards card. If you don't have it, go to quicktrip.com or just download the app and you're registered right away. Just remember, though, you got to register your card. Go to quicktrip.com or just download the app on your mobile device and you are good to go. That is our good friends from Quick Trip.
Bill Michaels Show, Wednesday edition, $108. Is what I spent last night online for a pair of Dallas Cowboys sweatpants. Talk about the money, talk about the greed. $108 fell right into it. But at least I get the sweatpants out of it. That's for my son. I don't think he's listening, but nonetheless, some more examples of the greed in the world of sports would be not to say that these guys are all out, you know, money grubbing, greedy fools, but just a side example of how we've escalated to this point. $220 million odd dollars is what the current owner of the Milwaukee Brewers spent on his baseball team. And the latest projections are is that his organization is now worth just under $1 billion. That's a billion with a B. So there are examples of the beer prices at these venues. I get it. Everybody wants to make the money. I don't blame the players. But when it just kind of slapped me in the face when, if this report is true, that Bryce Harper passes up a $300 million guaranteed contract, that's tough. That's tough for us common folk to really kind of understand the gravity of that.
For hitting a ball with a wooden bat.
Right. Whatever the activity is. Right. Now, if the activity was to, you know, perform surgery and remove a tumor, I mean, that to me, I would applaud the $300 million. We all know brain surgeons are not making $300 million.
They're making really good money, but not
right
$300 million.
Not there. Now, I understand the part of it. Scott Boras is paralleling a Bryce Harper a situation with a LeBron James, and I totally get it. And that is, you're not just getting a Bryce Harper four on the baseball field to hit a 2-2 count into left center for a base hit. You're also paying him for his marketing ability for your organization to improve the worth of your organization. So the Bryce Harper jerseys are going to fly off of that new team. And your Bryce Harper wristbands and batting gloves and mini bats. And I could go on and on and on. That's part of it too. And I get that. But that's part of where we're at now. And again, I force my mind to say, hey, I'm going to be a little more selfish. What do I get out of it? At this point, the money's going to go where it goes. And we all know where it goes. Into nice houses and jewelry and cars. But when I spend $75 on a night out at a ball game, beers and everything, hey, man, I got my beers, got my ball game, got my, hot dogs or whatever I'm going to eat. That's just a safer way to go for me. I just thank you for indulging me on that. Joe, nice job today. It was fun.
It's always a pleasure.
And downhill slide toward the weekend. Bill Michaels is back tomorrow. I'll get into the conversation about Bears and Packers. And the more I hear Chicago Bears speak and analysts speak that are in Chicago, Packers, if there's one game in you, get that game on Sunday. Humble that team. Bring them back down to earth. For Joe Zanzola, my name is Tim Allen. Bill's back tomorrow, and you've been listening to the Bill Michaels Show. Have a great day, Wisconsin.
Station strong, the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network.